live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us out on the road filming. Today, no guest, rather a lot more commentaries from Paul Buchheit, The Globalization of Hypocrisy, Nation of Change. Rise Up or Die, Chris Hedges. It's a long commentary. I'll do part of it. Four examples of the last efforts of people to apologize for Obama when he is absolutely destroying our environment with his policies. That is from Tara Lohan from Alternet. Dancing Towards Doomsday, Five Signs, The Game is Up, Thomas Magstadt. And I'll be adding in my own commentary. Plus today, continuing with our fascism, it's here. The Department of Homeland Security routinely spies upon American citizens. Dylan Murphy, Global Research. The latest on health and healing. Lots on the environment. And so needless to say, we have a full show. Let's begin. We always begin our program with the latest on health and healing. It's empowering. Not every woman suffers from PMS, but for those who do, it can be debilitating. I personally know women who have to miss one or two days of work because of cramping. For those of you who do suffer from PMS, you want to do something that's natural to help rebalance the body's biochemistry. It's not difficult. Here are some issues that can help you. First and foremost is increase the amount of magnesium, which is a natural muscle relaxer, and calcium. They work together. Calcium reduces the edema, which is common, and also it reduces food cravings. Magnesium reduces the cramping. I would say 1,000 milligrams and then go up maybe 200 milligrams until at a certain point with magnesium you'll start to have some loose bowels. But up to that point, it's benefiting you. Do more juicing, especially of red and orange colored fruits and vegetables. For example, a great juice for women who are PMSing to reduce fatigue and help them stop mood swings is papaya, mango, oranges, and red sweet peppers. It's a delicious dish, but it's one of the dishes, it's one of the juices I've created, and I've gotten so much positive feedback from so many people who have had problems with PMS. Also, wild yam tea is very important in that it can help recalibrate the level of estrogen and progesterone in the body. And that is very important. When you have an imbalance, you'll have symptoms. Wild yam tea helps with that. A power workout. You can do cycling. And the hardest gear, what's called the hardest resistance, that's terrific for you. You get in a good 10-mile nonstop, full power, stand-up pedaling. You are really helping the body. You're getting the blood circulating. That increases in the brain. That creates a better balance in serotonin. The endorphins are flooding your body. You feel better. Can really upset any mood swing. And then yoga. There are so many wonderful yoga positions. The standing forward fold. The supine bound angle. The child's pose, the balasana, these increase blood flow to the reproductive system, and they can help subside the body's cramping. Now, of course, vitamin B6 at 200 to 300 milligrams and folic acid methylated at 200 to 300 milligrams all make an enormous difference. So that's some things that can help you. I never drink tap water unless I'm assured that what's coming out of that tap is pure. In my home, I have deep wells. And those wells have rich mineral water. And that, in spite of that, it's still aerated because of the high levels of sulfur, which I don't like the taste of, even though sulfur is terrific for you. But the water is absolutely pure. When I'm in the city, I use a filter. And people say, isn't that a little extreme? And I say, compared to what? If I choose to purify my water or to drink healthy, clean water, I would say that that's erring on the side of caution. And hence I have a water filter that I use, and one that I, a portable one, that's gravity-fed that I always have, no matter where I'm at. I could be in the Amazon, and have been, and have no water, and I could filter my own water right out of the river and have no problem. Here's one reason you should pay more attention to your water. This is from the University of Maryland. Quote, Superbug MRSA identified in U.S. wastewater treatment plants. University of Maryland-led study is first to document environmental source of the antibiotic-resistant bacteria in the United States. A team led by researchers from the University of Maryland School of Public Health has found the superbug methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or MRSA, is prevalent at several U.S. wastewater treatment plants. Now, we know that MRSA is well known for causing difficult to treat and sometimes fatal bacterial infections in hospital patients. It's also been infecting otherwise healthy people in community settings. Quote, MRSA infections acquired outside of hospital settings known as community-acquired MRSA or CA MRSA are on the rise and can be just as severe as hospital-acquired MRSA. However, we still do not fully understand the potential environmental sources of MRSA or how people in the community come in contact with this microorganism. This is according to the professor in the Maryland Institute of Applied Environmental Health. This was the first study to investigate U.S. wastewater as a potential environmental reservoir for MRSA. And because infected people can shed MRSA from their noses and skin and through their feces, wastewater treatment plants are a likely reservoir for the bacteria. And the research team did exactly that. They collected wastewater samples throughout the treatment process at two Mid-Atlantic and two Midwestern water treatment plants. And these plants were chosen in part because treated effluent discharge from these plants is reused, what is called reclaimed wastewater. What do they do with it? They spray irrigate. Yeah, irrigate. That's not organic, but that's your typical. Who knew? Well, those of us in the organic movement knew. You don't want to use any form of sludge because it's got heavy metals, medicines, human feces, it's all in there. I don't want anything grown in that. And I sure don't want MRSA reclaimed wastewater spraying on anything that a human being will consume or touch. They found that MRSA, as well as a related pathogen, methicillin susceptible Staphylococcus aureus, MSSA, were present in every one of their samples. And, wow. MRSA was present, quote, in 83% of the effluent, the raw sewage at all plants, but the percentage of MRSA and MSSA positive samples decreased as treatment progressed, but it's still there on the other side. 93% of the MRSA strains that were isolated from the wastewater and 29% of the MRSA strains were resistant to two or more classes of antibiotics. So, and there's another thing. No one ever thought a second thing about going swimming in a public pool. I will not swim in any public pool in the United States. And I'm very conscientious where I swim for a simple reason. Because the chlorine is not going to disinfect feces. And if you had MRSA and didn't know it, and you were swimming in the water, it's in the water. And the chlorine actually in the water makes it more difficult to kill some of the bacteria from the human body. And for too long, we have been extremely tolerant of people having no hygiene when swimming in public places or allowing kids to make a mess in the water as if that's just being a kid. Well, okay. It may be just a kid, but it's the wrong place to go. But let's say that no one actually went in the water, in the swimming pool. Go back to my original concept that as a country, we're extremely dirty. I can show you people around the world who understand proper hygiene. We don't. We think if we take a shower in the morning, we're clean. If you wipe and you don't wash, you're unclean. Now you go into a swimming pool, and all that smeared feces is going into the water. And it's staying there. And you're going to drink it. How about that? One more reason why I'm not going into any public pool, period. But other people are very cavalier. They could care less. Okay, just remember, every single study shows there is no such thing as a clean swimming pool, public pool in the United States. There cannot be one because of all the bacteria coming off the body, especially feces. Eating walnuts and walnut oil slashes heart disease risk by improving multiple biometrics. This is a good study done at Penn State and Tufts University and the University of Pennsylvania, published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Nutrition. Here's what it says. The impact of eating nuts is extremely important because of the omega-3 fatty acids and because of that, healthier cardiovascular health, including lowering elevated cholesterol levels. Nuts are also extremely beneficial because of the fibers, vitamins, and minerals that they contain. Now, research teams at these three universities have given additional support that walnuts and the oil of walnut can help reduce the risk of heart disease. So my suggestion, a handful of walnuts each day. Now, some people in the health food store will walk by some of the exotic superfood packages and not know what they do, hence probably won't buy them. But stop when you see the one that's labeled MACA, M-A-C-A, MACA. It's a root. And what does it do? Well, it's indigenous to Peru, and for centuries, it's been a primary source of libido enhancement, immune boosting, and lowering cholesterol is very good. Now they've actually tested everything and found out that, gee whiz, it does do all these things. An article in the peer-reviewed edition of Neuroscience and Therapeutics looked at the individuals and did a workup on the blood chemistry and found that it does indeed do what it's supposed to do. So if you want to boost your libido, increase your stamina, and lower your cholesterol, a tablespoon of maca powder in your smoothie each day will just fit the ticket just perfectly, and it's all good. I do not believe that Americans should be using antidepressants. I believe that we have a large school of highly qualified and compassionate and humanistic psychotherapists, psychologists, and different therapists. They will do more for the vast majority of people in compassion therapy than any drug will do. There may be that extremely rare case, which does exist, where an antipsychotic medication for a short period of time may be necessary to protect a person from themselves or to protect others. But that is a tiny minority. The trouble is it's an industry, and it's profitable. And legions of scientists, physicians, salespeople, marketing in different areas, ads from magazines have all gotten on the bandwagon to try to justify the science behind it. The trouble is there is no good science behind it. Let me share this now from J.D. Hayes, Natural News. Quote, the list of dangerous antidepressants that cause sudden death is rapidly expanding. growing exponentially. And under brand names like Celexa and Cypermil, the latest such drug to be added, the research published in the current journal of the British Medical Journal revealed that the drug tends to cause a lengthening of the QT interval, a part of the cycle of heartbeat measured by an electrocardiogram, or what is more commonly known as the EKG or ECG. Indeed, a number of drugs are known for creating this phenomena, the most notable among them being methadone, which has been documented as causing sudden death in many patients, especially when dosages are increased too rapidly. Quote, there are no symptoms indicating a risk. A perfectly normal person will literally drop dead. End quote. Heidi Stevenson. The heartbeat is regulated by a series of electrical pulses, and key points of the pattern printed out on EKG are labeled PQRST. If the time between the Q and the T wave is lengthened, it is referred to as the QT elongation, or prolonged QT segment. The only way to know if it is occurring, however, is with an EKG. Quote, there are generally no external clues, so outside of testing, you'd have no way of knowing that you've been affected. And then they started looking at all the different tests and putting different drugs to the test, and lots of bad coming out. In one test, they examined 38,000 adults who were taking an antidepressant or methadone, and they found with drugs such as Prozac and Paxil and Zoloft and Cymbalta and Remeron that these people were on these drugs. So my suggestion, before you allow yourself to put on any psychiatric medication, seek Henry Grayson. Seek one of the holistic psychologists. They will do far more for you. And finally, from Health and Healing Area, people in this audience, I believe, are conscientious of do not be cavalier when it comes to bacteria, because you end up getting sick. This is from Medical News. It's the newest article on this topic. Here's what it has to say. 20% of all handbags carry more bacteria than a toilet. Now, astonishingly, a high percentage of women's handbags carry that much, and that's according to a new report on the topic. And so you got to look at something simple. Quote, handbags come into regular contact with our hands and a variety of surfaces, so the risk of transferring different germs often onto them is very high, especially as bags are rarely cleaned. Once these germs get on the bags, they can easily be transferred via the hands onto other surfaces. Regular hand sanitation is essential to prevent the presence of bacteria in the first place, and thorough cleansing of the bag is recommended to prevent the buildup of the contamination. And researchers said leather handbags in particular pose the most significant health hazard because their spongy material is an ideal environment for most bacteria. This finding means that the most cherished handbags of many women may actually be a breeding ground for harmful bacteria. Okay, so some of the most expensive bags in the world are those leather designer bags. And that means those women are carrying an awful lot of bacteria around and put themselves at risk, which is unfortunate and not necessary. What you can do is, I'm against leather handbags, absolutely, but if you get a handbag, if it's made out of cloth, just watch where you sit it, because how many times have people set bags on dirty, filthy floors, then put them on their seat, now it's on your clothes, and it doesn't get wiped off. And then you handle it, and you're in and out of it many times, then you're infecting your hands, then you touch your mouth, your eyes, your nose, now you're getting that into your body. And my suggestion would be that after each trip, throw your washable in and wash it. Otherwise, just take hydrogen peroxide or rubbing alcohol with a paper towel and vigorously wipe the surface completely inside and out. It only takes a couple of minutes, and the scrubbing is what really kills. Not just pouring alcohol or hydrogen peroxide, but you move it. The agitation breaks down the cell, the bacteria, the virus. So simple to do. So easy to do. By the way, I do the same thing with running shoes. You know, every week, throw them in, bleach them out, let them dry, and at least you've disinfected them. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. We're going to have some commentary. I set aside one day a week to share commentaries on issues that I do not believe are getting the attention they deserve, and yet they're important to all of us. This is from Nation of Change, The Globalization of Hypocrisy. It's short, but it says a lot. From Paul Buchheit. The damage caused by the relentless corporate drive for profits has become more clear in recent years. In the most important areas of American life, devastating changes have occurred. First, health care. Almost half of the working class adults in America passed up doctor visits or other medical services because they couldn't afford to pay. The system has not supported kids either. A UNICEF study in the U.S. showed that we were 26 out of 29 countries in the overall well-being of its children. In education, student loan balances increased by 75% from 2007-2012. In household wealth, the median wealth fell by 66% among Hispanic households and 53% among black households between 2005 and 2009, mainly because of the mortgage banking collapse. Almost half of all Americans have zero wealth, with their assets surpassing nothing. Their debt surpassing everything. Water and food, life-giving seeds and drinking water, have been increasingly treated as products to be bought and sold by multinationals. All of these areas of life have been degraded by a free market system that has thrived on publicly funded research, infrastructure, and defense. Yet in a brazen show of hypocrisy, major corporations have ignored all the problems they've caused, choosing instead to cut their taxes in half despite doubling of their profits, to hold 60% of their cash offshore to eliminate workers rather than create jobs, and to reduce the pay of the remaining employees. An Apple executive explained, quote, "We don't have an obligation to solve America's problems." Calling themselves multinational? No. No allegiance to anyone. Big business has found its utopia, a world in which millions of people are willing to work for a fraction of U.S. salaries. In this dream world of global capitalism, young people are going from zero income on the farm to a few dollars a day on a 12-hour factory shift. And as a result, based upon the World Bank's poverty threshold of $1.25 per day total income, they're no longer, quote, in poverty. How can you say that someone is not in poverty when they're only living on $1.25 a day? So the media piles on praise for free markets. The Economist magazine proclaimed, quote, poverty is declining everywhere. The Washington Post gushed that, quote, a billion people have been lifted from poverty through free market competition. But the reality is very different. Inequality continues to grow, both between and within countries. Poverty levels have not changed in about 30 years, with almost half of all humanity, it's about 3.5 billion people, living on less than $2.25 a day. A quarter of the world's children, that's over 170 million children under the age of 5, are growing up stunted because of gross malnutrition. The World Bank estimates that the total cost for a successful attack on malnutrition would be about $10 billion a year. Apple alone underpaid its 2012 taxes by $11 billion, based upon a 35% rate. It may be time to update the company's quote, quote, "We don't have an obligation to solve the world's problems." Even if there were no obligation to help solve the world's problems, there is an obligation to pay for global energy consumption and infrastructure usage and industrial pollution. Yet a review of 25 multinational companies shows clear negligence in meeting that responsibility. The 25 companies, with almost $500 billion in income, pay just 8% in taxes in the U.S. and 9% to foreign countries. Now, mind you, 35% tax paid in any country would have generated another $90 billion over 2 years to battle malnutrition. Even worse than not paying, making the world pay for them. A recent study estimated that toxic pollution affects the health of more than 100 million people, shortening their productive lifespans by 12.7 years on average. A study concluded that 8 million individuals were at risk of exposure to industrial pollutants at 373 toxic waste sites in three countries, India, Indonesia, and the Philippines. That's a lot of people. Some of our largest multinational companies hold top positions on the Federal Contract Misconduct List, which recognizes corporate environmental, ethical, and labor violations. Oil spills are common. Underdeveloped countries like Nigeria have been ravaged by oil production. Big firms are buying up farmland in more than 60 developing countries. Most perversely, multinationals are working hard to pass trade agreements such as the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which would actually dismantle all environmental protections. And remember, Barack Obama is the biggest cheerleader for dismantling all environmental protections because he, and he alone, is responsible for saying that the Trans-Pacific Partnership is written by the 600 corporations and their lobbyists and lawyers and given quick passage in the United States. Absurd as it once seemed, a 1991 quote from the World Bank's Larry Summers now comes back to haunt us. Quote, he said, "Just between you and me, shouldn't the World Bank be encouraging more migration of the dirty industries to the lesser developed countries? I've always thought that underpopulated countries in Africa are vastly underpolluted," end quote. Mind you, Bill Clinton made him the top treasury guy and the top economic advisor under Obama. So let me repeat that so we know what he actually feels. Quote, "Just between you and me, shouldn't the World Bank be encouraging more migration of the dirty industries to the lesser developed countries? I've always thought that underpopulated countries in Africa are vastly underpolluted. And as a big business makes its way around the world like a modern-day Attila the Hun, pillaging and despoiling, it has the U.S. military covering its back with 900 overseas bases in 130 nations. If one of the countries kicks up a fuss, the corporations could just move on to the next one." I'm Gary Knoll. Commentary time. Two more, and then it's time for your calls. We'll be opening it up in our talkback segment. There is a short piece, and I'm going to ask my engineer in New York to find it. It's from Rand Paul, a short 2-minute piece talking about laws. It's very informative. And irrespective of his political position, he is absolutely 1,000% right on this. A little background. With each time a law was being proposed that I saw would adversely affect the American public, we tried to get as much background on who was really behind the law, who was writing the law, who benefited from it, not just the public face of it or the lies of the sociopathic politicians, they all are, telling us why we needed this. And especially egregious to me was the paragraph that was inserted into one bill that indemnified, made harmless all vaccine makers from any lawsuit. Another was put into the Medicare bill, but the bill only got to members of Congress that morning, and it was 1,300 pages, so hence no one read the bill. And they voted on it that night. But one provision in the middle of it said that the United States government could not negotiate for generic priced identical products for Medicare, Medicaid, or VA. That meant that whoever was behind writing this bill stood to make probably close to $1 trillion in profits over the course of 10 years because you could charge astronomical prices and no one could say otherwise. But why wasn't this stopped? Rand Paul made a statement just this week on this, and I'm asking my engineer to find that piece so we can air it. Corporations write our legislation. They write all of our legislation. All of it. Did you know that? Did you know at your state level, as corrupt and pathetic as the New Jersey and New York and all the other state legislators are, the vast majority of what is written is all based upon the politics, not based upon what we need. They control our system of information. They manage the political theater of electoral politics and impose our educational curriculum. They have turned the judiciary into one of their wholly owned subsidiaries. They have decimated labor unions and other independent mass organizations, as well as having bought off the Democratic Party completely, which once defended, once, long ago, in a different era, the Democrats actually defended the rights of workers. With the evisceration of the piecemeal and incremental reform, the primary role of liberal democratic institutions, we are left defenseless against corporate power. The Department of Justice seizure of 2 months of records of phone calls to and from editors and reporters at the Associated Press is the latest in a series of dramatic assaults against our civil liberties. The Department of Justice, its move is a part of an effort to hunt down the government official or officials who leaked information to the AP about the foiling of a plot to blow up a passenger jet. Information concerning phones of Associated Press bureaus in New York and Washington, Hartford, Connecticut, as well as the home and mobile phones of editors and reporters were secretly confiscated. This alone should have brought an awareness to our consciousness. It did not. With these measures and the use of the Espionage Act against whistleblowers, this will put a deep freeze on all independent investigations into abuses of government and corporate power. Seizing the AP phone logs is part of the corporate state's broader efforts to silence all voices that defy the official narrative. The state's news speak and hide from public view the inner workings, lies, and crimes of empire. The person or persons who provided the classified information AP will, if arrested, most likely be prosecuted under the Espionage Act. That law was never intended when it was instituted in 1917 to silence whistleblowers. And from 1917 until Barack Obama took office, 2009, it was employed against whistleblowers only 3 times. The first time against Daniel Ellsberg for leaking the Pentagon Papers in 1971. The Espionage Act has been used 6 times by Barack Obama against whistleblowers, including Thomas Drake. The government's fierce prosecution of the press, an attack pressed by many of the government agencies that are arrayed against WikiLeaks, Bradley Manning, Julian Assange, and activists like Jeremy Hammond, dovetails with the government's use of the 2001 authorization for use of military force to carry out the assassination of U.S. citizens. The FISA Amendments Act, which retroactively makes legal what under our Constitution was once illegal, the warrantless wiretapping and monitoring of tens of millions of U.S. citizens, and the Section 1021 of the National Defense Authorization Act, which permits the government to have the military seize U.S. citizens, strip them of due process, and hold them in indefinite detention, these measures taken together mean there are almost no civil liberties left. A handful of corporate oligarchs around the globe have everything, wealth, power, and privilege. And the rest of us struggle as part of a vast underclass, increasingly impoverished and ruthlessly repressed. There is one set of laws and regulations for us. There's another set of laws and regulations for a power elite that functions as a global mafia. We stand helpless before the corporate onslaught. There's no way to vote against corporate power. Citizens have no way to bring about the prosecution of Wall Street bankers and financiers for fraud, military and intelligence officials for torture and war crimes, or security and surveillance officers for human rights abuses. The Federal Reserve is reduced to printing money from four banks and financiers and lending it to them at zero interest. Corporate officers then lend it to us at usurious rates of up to 30%. I do not know what to call this system. It certainly is not capitalism. Extortion might be a better word. The fossil fuel industry, meanwhile, relentlessly trashes the ecosystem for profit. The melting of 40% of the summer Arctic ice is, to corporations, a business opportunity. Companies rush to the Arctic and extract the last vestiges of oil, natural gas, minerals, and fish stocks, indifferent to the death pangs of the planet. The same corporate forces that give us endless soap operas that pass for news, from the latest court proceedings surrounding O.J. Simpson to the tawdry details of the Jodi Arias murder trial, also give us atmospheric concentrations of carbon dioxide that surpass 400 parts per million. They entertain us with their electronic hallucinations as we waver, as paralyzed with fear. Yes, there is nothing in 5,000 years of economic history to justify the belief that human society should structure their behavior around the demands of the marketplace. This is an absurd utopian ideology. The airy promises the market economy have by now all been exposed as blatant lies. The ability of corporations to migrate overseas has decimated our manufacturing base. It has driven down wages, impoverished our working class, and ravaged our middle class. It has forced huge segments of the population, including those burdened by student loans, into decades of debt peonage. It has also opened the way to massive tax shelters that allow companies such as General Electric to pay no income tax. Corporations employ virtual slave labor in Bangladesh and China, making obscene profits. As corporations suck the last resources from communities in the natural world, they leave behind, as Joe Sacco said, sacrifice zones, horrific human suffering, dead landscapes. The greater the destruction, the greater the apparatus crushes dissent. More than 100 million Americans, one-third of the population, live in poverty, or in a category called near poverty. Yet the stories of the poor and the near poor, the hardships they endure, are rarely told by a media that is owned by a handful of corporations: Viacom, General Electric, Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation, Clear Channel, and Disney. The suffering of the underclass, like the crimes of the power elite, has been rendered invisible. In the Lakota Indian Reservation at Pine Ridge, South Dakota, in the United States, second poorest county, the average life expectancy for a male is 48. This is the lowest in the Western Hemisphere outside of Haiti. And about 60% of the Pine Ridge dwellings, many of which are sod huts, lack electricity and running water, adequate insulation or sewage systems. In the old coal camps of southern West Virginia, amid poisoned air and soil and water, cancer is an epidemic. There are few jobs, and the Appalachian Mountains, which provide the headwaters for much of the eastern seaboard, are dotted with enormous impoundment ponds filled with heavy metals and toxic sludge. In order to breathe, children go to school in southeastern West Virginia clutching inhalers. Residents trapped in the internal colonies of our blighted cities endure levels of poverty and violence, as well as mass incarceration, that leave them psychologically and emotionally shattered. And the nation's agricultural workers, denied legal protection, are often forced to labor in conditions of unpaid bondage. This is the terrible algebra of corporate domination. This is where we are all headed. And in this accelerated race to the bottom, we will end up as serfs or slaves. Back in a moment. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Knoll. Your turn to offer your insights when we return. Welcome, all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. This is On the Climate. Interesting, yesterday I was raising funds for our sister station in Los Angeles, and I had just said the following. When we wake up each day, we never think about the disasters. We don't think about what could happen. And I started to think about the hurricanes that are coming, and I mentioned that Hurricane Sandy will be a minor one compared to what we're going to be facing this year, next year, and the tornadoes that happened last week. And just as I was saying that, got the report that the tornado was 1 mile wide, strongest it ever recorded, and decimated everything in its wake. We're now in complete and total chaos when it comes to our environment. This is the latest, and this is from the journal Nature Geoscience, and this is from Fiona Harvey, the environmental correspondent, quote from Countercurrents, climate crisis disaster looms. Citing a new study published in the journal Nature Geoscience, global warming would lead to catastrophe large enough that it would lead large swaths of the earth with drought, storms, floods, heat waves, and drastic effects on agricultural productivity, leading to secondary effects as mass migration. Alexander Otto, University of Oxford, the lead author in the story, said the climate change models used by scientists were, quote, pretty accurate. Well, it's all bad to the bone, so my previous guest was absolutely correct. And Guy McPherson, when he said, no one likes bad news. Well, I'm not emotionalizing about it. I simply say if I know what's bad and coming, I can prevent it. I can get myself out of harm's way and others who are willing to listen. Hopefully this audience is willing to listen, because it is bad to the bone. In a moment, your calls on our talkback segment. I'm happy to take them on any of the issues you find important. But we haven't offered a special in a while, so several weeks, so I ask, what is one of our most popular products that we could offer at a really good price? And I was told one of our top three products is greens and grains. Now, this is unique in that it's raw, It's all natural. It's vegan. There's no GMO. And it starts off, with the organic flaxseed powder. And the powder, because once you make it into a powder by pulverizing it, you make it usable, assimilatable. Otherwise, if you just take flaxseed, I'm afraid that they could go right through your body. Then we put in there the oat and the oat grasses, the whole leaf aloe powder, the pumpkin seeds, green kamut juice, sprouted quinoa, sprouted kamut, sprouted amaranth, sprouted spelt. Because they're sprouted, there's no gluten. The probiotics, the yucca, fennel, ginseng, chia seed, the bromelain from pineapple enzymes, sea vegetables, a whole list of sea vegetables, a bunch of them, lots of them, about 8 of them, I think. And then a carotenoid complex and ginger root, more probiotics, 8 billion probiotics. So, and that's it. Natural cherry flavor with pineapple. Big size, month supply. This is one of the 3 most popular items that I make. So we're offering it at a big discount. And call the following number, and they'll give it to you at the discount and explain everything to you. And I'm going to ask my engineer. I'm out here on the road, so I don't have that. I think that number is 877. No, I'm not going to guess. They'll put that number up here in a second for me. So that's our special today. Greens and Grains, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 for Greens and Grains. Just one of the most powerful, nutritious, healthy powders you could ever take. I couldn't put it all in one. That's why we have green stuff and Greens and Grains, red stuff and Berry Blast. Because if you put it all in one, you're having to give such a small amount of each one that it's not going to do any good. So I'm going to give full amounts, big doses. So Greens and Grains, it's just super. It's phenomenal. 877-627-5065. I'm going to ask my engineer if he was able to find that few-minute cut from Rand Paul so that I can play that. I'd like for them to hear that. I couldn't find that. All right, then we will. Jason has a copy, and I'll ask Jason to get you a copy. I am going to play something now that I believe is very important for us to hear. This is the latest information from Dr. Andrew Wakefield, because this really nails it, that all the attacks against him were wrong, that he didn't suddenly come up with some information that was unscientifically supported or scientifically supporting the idea of a relationship between vaccines and autism. He wasn't the first. Listen to what he has to say. This is just brand new in. I want you to hear it.
I'd like to tie up a few loose ends, very loose ends, both in the UK and the US. To better understand the crucial context of this video, please go to the Autism Media Channel, autismmediachannel.com, to review the short series of my videos under Hot Topics. First, the measles epidemic in Wales. The official figures are now available until the end of March. You'll remember that it was at the beginning of April that I was first blamed for the epidemic there. It's therefore disturbing to discover that in Swansea, a town at the supposed epicenter of the outbreak, out of 183 reported measles cases, there was only one laboratory-confirmed case for the entire month of March. One. Down from 3 in February. As Mr. John Stone said in the British Medical Journal's Rapid Responses, there is clearly some explaining to do. It would obviously be very worrying if people were being told that they had measles when it was in fact some lesser illness. It has been repeated many times that I am the only one to have reported an association between MMR vaccine and autism, but no other doctor has reported this association and that it is, in effect, the delusion of one rogue scientist and parents looking for something to blame. It has always been somewhat difficult to reconcile how, since MMR was introduced in 1989 in the UK and over 10 years earlier in the US, why we, at the Royal Free Hospital in London, should have been the first to hear such reports from parents as late as 1995. Isn't it likely that if the association were real, other doctors would have heard of it before and reported it to the authorities? They did. Here is a letter obtained under the Freedom of Information Act from the UK regulator, the MHRA, the equivalent of the US FDA, confirming 22 spontaneous reports from doctors of autism following MMR vaccine. These reports were received prior to publication of the Lancet paper, and presumably known to you, Dr. Salisbury, as head of immunisation in the UK. All reports were made by many independent, qualified medical practitioners. Here, in a separate letter, also obtained under FOIA from the UK regulator, what appear to be, because of the timing, four additional reports naming Pluserix and Imravax, the dangerous Urabi mumps strain containing MMR vaccines, confirming that the first report of autism following MMR was made in 1992, fully 3 years before it first came to my attention and 6 years before it was reported in The Lancet. Did you know, Dr. Salisbury? Did you know? Certainly you should have known. The very first case was autism associated with meningitis. That is the precise complication that Urabi-containing vaccine, meningitis, was responsible for. So you should have known about these. And what action did you take in 1992 when you were forced to rapidly withdraw that dangerous vaccine because it caused meningitis? Let me underscore my concerns. These are spontaneous reports. It's well recognized that such reports greatly underestimate the true incidence of adverse reactions. This fact alone should have been of concern to you, Dr. Salisbury. The purpose of such spontaneous reporting systems for adverse reactions is, in the words of Robert Chen and his colleagues at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in the US, and published in the journal Vaccine in 1994, most importantly, to serve as a sentinel for the detection of previously unreported vaccine adverse events. This sentinel role is especially important for newly licensed vaccines, such as, of course, the MMR vaccine in the UK. These cases of autism following MMR, reported by doctors from 1992 onwards, were the sentinel cases. And what about the US, Dr. Salisbury? What about your colleagues in the US? Were they hearing of similar cases? Did you consult with them? Dr. Yazbek, a paediatrician, identified 15 such reports in the CDC's Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System prior to December 1997. And Dr. Wu of the FDA identified at least 70 such cases in VAERS, the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, that were reported prior to 1998, the year the Lancet paper was published. In this graph, the black bars are the numbers of reported cases by calendar year. So they were there. The sentinel cases of vaccine-caused autism were there all along. And now, of course, the US Vaccine Court has recognized and the US government has conceded the causal association between MMR vaccine and autism.
Let me explain what you're hearing. You're hearing Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who was a part of a large team back in the 90s who looked at some children and determined, do they have a autism spectrum disorder condition due to the MMR vaccines? They were not able to state that there was an absolute correlation, and they so stated, but yet they were labeled with saying, oh, it causes autism. They never stated it. It was never written. This is the kind of systematic attack, and I'll bet anything the pharmaceutical industry and the makers of the MMR vaccine were behind this. Now he's showing in this clip that, hey, there were all these other stories and documents that came your way showing that this was a bad vaccine. The MMR, the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine was bad. Now, there's another part of this I'll play tomorrow that shows you that the mumps vaccine has never been able to cure or prevent mumps, and it's therefore worthless. That's also in this. But he's challenging the top medical scientists in the Great Britain by saying, you targeted me, as saying that I said, I never said anything of a kind. I said it needed further research, but you already knew, should have known. You had all this information and you hid it, the MMR vaccine causing autism. So that's just one more truth on the side of Andrew Wakefield and one more lie on the part of the British Medical Society. We have found part of the clip of Rand Paul stating something that no one is aware of, that none of our laws are actually written on behalf of the citizens by members of Congress. They're given to members of Congress. This is a disgrace. This is a scandal. These worthless degenerates should all be kicked out of Congress. Otherwise, why don't you just ask General Electric or Coors Beer or the Koch brothers just to tell us on television how they want us to live, and then have Congress rubber stamp it and have the Justice Department, the clowns of they, to enforce it, because that's what it means in the real world. Outside financial interests are writing laws for their interests and against our interests, and this guy at least had the decency to stand up and call it. Here he is.
The senator from Kentucky.
Currently, Congress has about a 10% approval rate. One of the reasons is we don't even obey our own rules. For goodness sakes, 600-page bill, and I got it this morning. Not one member of the Senate will read this bill before we vote on it. We're going to vote on this in the next 30 minutes. I and Senator Lee and others will object to this. We'll have a point of order that our own rules say that it has to be posted online for 48 hours. 600 pages. No one will read it. No wonder our approval rating is 10%. Nobody knows what we're voting on. In fact, things have been stuck in this bill last night that have nothing to do with any of these bills, and they've been stuck in, and we're just now discovering it. I passed two senators in the hall going back to their office, still trying to get out something that's been written into this bill that affects their state that they found out minutes ago. Had they not found out about it, nobody would have known about it. Three bills that are in question here: transportation bill, student loan bill. The student loan bill, originally we had the loans at 6%, and it was somehow bringing in money to the Treasury. We were using that money to pay for Obamacare. Now it's at 3%, that money's gone. Where's the money to pay for Obamacare? We have a shell game up here. We say one thing's going to pay for it, now this is going to pay for it. Money disappears. Now what they're saying is they're going to pay for this by taking money out of pensions. Raise your hand if you think it's a good idea to underfund pensions more. Over half of the pensions in this country are technically insolvent because they don't have enough money to pay for them. Is it a good idea to have less money go into workers' pension to pay for a student loan program? I have a bill in Congress that says we should read the bills before we pass them. It says that we should wait one day.
So who's writing the bills? Outside lobbyists. Who do they represent? Special interest groups. How does that benefit we, the people? It does not. How does that hurt us? It makes a mockery of what we call our democratic process. And it's at every level. I am in such contempt for all of these processes that lack transparency and honest and authentic input from the citizens of our country. I would hope that others would also be disturbed by this. This is just one example. They're going to pass a law that no one's read, that none of them wrote. That is a total sellout. That means that our members of Congress and the White House, they're just pimps. Pimping for special interests. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you for listening. Let's say hello to Eutrice Lead. Hi, Eutrice.
Hello, Gary. A very powerful program today.
Yep.
I enjoyed listening to especially the end of it, where the damning comments about how laws are passed. Today we're talking about legislation awaiting the signature of the governor of Florida to speed up executions, and there are 404 people on death row in Florida. And the Economic Policy Institute raises an alarm about the persistence of race as a major factor in the growing numbers of the unemployed.
We look forward to it, Eutrice.
Thank you, Gary.
Eutrice Lead, right now.